This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. It's a busy day in Montpelier today. People are stepping a little gingerly around on the slushy sidewalks. It's kind of an aberration to have an opening day of the legislature this warm. At least in my memory, it has been bone-chillingly cold most of the years we've been here. There was a preponderance of official House and Senate license plates on the cars heading north and south along the highway today. They were streaming towards the golden-domed State House, the building on the hill, for the opening of the new legislative session. This is a day when the State House is buzzing with activity. It's kind of like the first day of school. Old friends and frenemies get hugs or handshakes. New ones are congratulated, maybe gently hazed, I don't know. Phil Scott performed his last duties as lieutenant governor, swearing in the 30 senators who will represent their constituents for 2 years. Tim Ash was elected Senate President Pro Tem. Mitzi Johnson, who will join us in a few minutes, was elected Speaker of the House. We are broadcasting today from the ornate Cedar Creek Room. It's kind of a thoroughfare that connects the front of the State House to the busy cafeteria. Today, we're going to talk with leaders from the three major parties in the House of Representatives. Tomorrow, we'll get the perspective from the State Senate. But first, let's look to the expertise of our longtime State House reporter, Bob Kinzel, who's going to help us preview this session. Hi, Bob.
Hey, Jane.
So this year we have a new governor, a new lieutenant governor, a new House Speaker, a new Senate President Pro Tem. How unusual is it that all of those top leadership positions are being filled by new people this year?
Very, very unusual. I can't remember this happening before. I've talked to some longtime legislative observers. They can't remember a time like this happening before. And it may take a while for them all to develop their leadership styles, but these are not political neophytes. These are people who really know the system. Governor-elect Scott, of course, served as lieutenant governor, also as a state senator. He has a reputation for collaboration with the Democrats. Lieutenant governor-elect David Zuckerman served in both the House and the Senate, chaired the Agriculture Committee, very involved in issues of income inequality, also health care. So he knows the ropes here. And of course, you'll be speaking momentarily with House Speaker Mitzi Johnson. Probably knows the budget. She's been the chairperson of the House Appropriations Committee for the last 4 years. She probably knows the budget better than anybody else in the House. And I dare say the only person in this building who knows it better might be the Senate Appropriations Chairperson, Jane Kitchell. So Mitzi Johnson wants to bring sort of a new approach to budgeting in the House, and it's going to be really interesting to see how it works. And here's an example. She wants the committees of jurisdiction to have more say over the budget. So let's take the Education Committee. Mm-hmm. They will be more involved in the budget for the Agency of Education. And that really hasn't happened before. And she's talked about doing this, and other speakers have talked about doing it, but they really haven't put it into place. So it'll be interesting to see if it works this year. And then, of course, we have the new Senate President, Tim Ash. Strong background on the Finance Committee. He knows the tax code as well as anybody else in this building. And it'll be interesting to see if this is the year that Senator Ash decides to make some comprehensive changes in tax codes.
You know, Bob, it was interesting. I was going to ask you, in terms of having new leadership all across the board, if that's likely to mean a slower start, especially here in the legislature when, you know, often the business doesn't get started for a few days. We often see in the governor's office that it takes a little while for him to have a budget address, for example. But just this morning, Mitzi Johnson, new Speaker of the House, right out of the gate, had her committee assignments ready. And you mentioned she's doing some different things with those committee assignments. She's also reorganized some of them, and we'll talk with her about that. Any idea when Tim Ash might follow suit now that there's been this precedent set in the House?
I would think it would be very soon. And, you know, the first year of the biennium is slow anyway. You know, the committees get organized. They look at the issues they're going to be dealing with. And this year, there's a lot of turnover in the House. And a lot of people have moved around to different committees. So that's going to slow things down a little more. But there's no urgent issue that has to be dealt with, let's say, in the first 6 weeks of the session.
It's not like the second half of a biennium where things are held over and people can just get right to work.
Exactly.
Anything else that you think is unusual in this opening start, opening day, or things that you're looking at even today as we get started in the legislative session?
Well, I'm thinking of what a difficult task it's going to be for some committees in the legislature because there's so much uncertainty down in Washington. And, for instance, let's look at healthcare and Vermont Health Connect and what's going to happen there. And Governor-elect Scott is talking about moving to the federal system. Well, that may or may not happen with this legislature. I kind of doubt that it will. But the bigger picture is, what happens if Republicans in the Congress repeal the Affordable Care Act? And is there even a federal exchange to deal with? So how do they navigate these very difficult issues with all this uncertainty in Washington? And it plays out across the board. You can see it with budgetary issues. What's going to happen to Medicaid? Will there be a block grant for states? That would have a huge impact. So in a way, some committees like the Appropriations Committees and the Healthcare Committees, even the Education Committee, they're going to have to keep an eye on Washington. But the likelihood is that things won't be decided in Washington until after they go home.
Right.
So how do they deal with this? I think they have to make the best guess they can, put a contingency place, a plan in place, and if they need to, bring lawmakers back this summer if the federal government makes drastic changes.
Well, maybe they're glad that the marijuana legislation didn't pass last year, because at least we don't have to worry now about what happens with federal, with the new president-elect deciding to make some changes perhaps with how the feds deal with legalized marijuana in the states.
And that's a perfect example of, as they take it up this year, they're going to have an attorney general in Washington who strongly opposes legalization of marijuana, Jeff Sessions. How is that going to affect the debate in Vermont? Is that going to slow things down at all? So it's this it's this huge cloud of uncertainty that I think is going to be difficult to deal with.
Listeners, we're talking today about the opening of the legislature. It is the opening day today. And if you have something that you think is a top priority, you want to get that agenda on the table today, we are going to be talking with representatives in the House about what their priorities are. Why don't you tell them what you want them to do? Our number is 1-800-639-2211. Again, that's 800-639-2211. You can also post a note on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. Bob, this is the opening day for the legislature, but the new governor won't be sworn in until tomorrow. So Peter Shumlin has one more day left in the Shumlin era. And before the new governor gets sworn in, Peter Shumlin is hoping to make one more big decision. He'd like to be the one to replace the retiring Supreme Court Justice John Dooley, to choose a replacement. He's not actually hoping to replace him. Now, the sticky wicket here, of course, is that Justice Dooley has announced his retirement, but he's not going to retire until April, which is long after Shumlin will be out of office. And Don Turner, the Republican representative from Milton, who we will also be hearing from in a little bit, has filed suit to prevent Governor Shumlin from making an appointment. The Supreme Court of Vermont heard arguments yesterday. We are still, as of, what is it now, 12:15, awaiting a decision from them, Bob?
Everybody in this building is checking their phones to see when this decision is coming down. I think it's coming down this afternoon. I mean, I think the court realizes the urgency of making this decision one way or the other, and that waiting until tomorrow is really not a great idea. So that's just a guess. I have no inside information. But what an amazing case, and the court having to decide whether or not it wants to block a sitting governor from making this important appointment. As you say, the question is there a vacancy, and does this apply in this case? And we're told that the governor did interview six candidates.
So he's ready.
He's got the person ready to go. And I wouldn't be surprised that if the court today ruled that he does have the ability to do it, that we would get that from the governor and actually maybe even have a press conference with the new justice. You know, it's interesting, if he does get this appointment, he will have named a majority of members to the Vermont Supreme Court. They're all relatively young. So that's a long-lasting legacy for Peter Shumlin.
Is Don Turner right? His argument against allowing this to happen is that this could set a precedent for all kinds of other appointments that a future governor could make before leaving office.
I don't know about all sorts, but there is a really good example, and that's the Green Mountain Care Board. We have Al Gobay, who is the chairman of the board, stepping down. We know he's going to take a job in the Scott administration as the Secretary of Human Services. Well, what if Al Gobay resigned last week? Would there be a vacancy for the governor to fill? So, I mean, I think Representative Turner's right. There are other instances where if the circumstances lined up exactly the same, it could happen.
So, Bob, what do you think are likely to be the top issues on the legislative and the gubernatorial agenda? What are we going to be seeing coming out of Montpelier in the next couple of months?
I think the budget is going to be a big one. We're looking at a rather large budget gap of perhaps as much as $75 million. We're going to have a governor-elect Scott who is going to decide that the budget increase for next year should only be about 2 or 3%. He's going to tag that to the growth of wages for working Vermonters. There may be some Democrats in both the House and the Senate who think that's too limited. And they're going to be looking at some tough decisions for the budget. So I think budgetary issues are going to take front and center for this legislature.
All right, Bob. Well, we are going to look forward to hearing more of your reporting as the session continues. VPR's Bob Kinzel helping us get rolling here on the opening day of the legislature. Bob, thanks very much.
My pleasure, Jane.
We are going to look at priorities in the House of Representatives for the rest of the show. And if you listeners would like to share your questions or comments, give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. You can also post a note on the Vermont Edition page at VPR.net. Let your representatives know what you hope they focus on. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. We are broadcasting from the Vermont State House today as the legislature convenes to begin the work of setting Vermont's political agenda for the next 2 years. Let us know what you want to see our lawmakers tackle now that you've entrusted them to do the people's work. Call 1-800-639-2211 or post a note on the Vermont Edition page at VPR.net. We're going to spend the rest of the hour talking with House members. Tomorrow we will hear from some senators. And we're joined first by the newly elected Speaker of the House, Democrat Mitzi Johnson, who represents Chittenden Grand Isle. Representative Johnson, nice to have you back on the program.
Nice to see you again so soon, Jane.
I was just asking you if you have a Twitter handle. I was going to tweet out a photo of you, and this is one of the many things that you are trying to get organized now that you're Speaker of the House.
Yes. Yes. So my chief of staff was setting all of that stuff up, and that was not one of the details that I was privy to this morning in trying to orchestrate everything else.
Yeah, you have a lot on your mind, and let's get to one of the biggest ones and perhaps the biggest surprise of the morning. It was not a surprise that you were elected. That was, if not a given, at least a presumption. But you were not necessarily expected to be making committee assignments before lunch. Why did you want to get out of the gate rolling and get those committee assignments out there?
I don't think Vermonters really understand that the committees is where the work really happens in the State House. The floor that you see and the debate that you see in front of the full 150 members is the culmination of a lot of the real detailed hard lift that happens in every committee. And so, you know, when I was first elected, we'd have to wait until the following week, sometimes the end of the second week, which means we're sitting around for 2 weeks enjoying the pomp and circumstance and the State House cafeteria cookies. So I really wanted to make sure that people could get settled, have an understanding of what they were going to need to wrap their head around, begin to get to know their committee members, so that committees could have at least an introduction this week so that we could really get to work as soon as possible.
Did your colleagues in the House know that you were going to be making committee assignments today, or was that a surprise to them as well?
I'm not sure. When people had asked, it is unusual, I think, for a new speaker to make committee assignments on the first day. I believe Speaker Smith did it, and I just remember I've had the pleasure of serving under three different speakers, and tried to reflect a lot on what I liked about each of their styles, and his no-nonsense, get-to-work attitude, I think, really helped the House, and that's one thing that I wanted to carry forward.
Before we leave this question of committee assignments, because as you said, this is where the real work gets done, so it's notable that you have made changes. I mean, not only in who is on what committee, which you and I talked about a couple of weeks ago, because there were so many new members that you had to move some senior members over to new committees, but also you changed some of what the committees will be doing. Can you talk about some of the changes that you've made on healthcare or forestry, for example?
Sure. one of, I mean, my main initiative is really making government work better. And I talked with you a lot about the evaluation and prioritization work. And when I looked at how each committee would do that and the agenda that would be required in each committee to do so, it was clear that some committees had a very broad jurisdiction and some committees had capacity. And so I was really interested in evening out the workload, in clarifying some of the places where jurisdiction was either split in a very weird way or just look at places where we as the legislature do not have the kind of direct oversight that Vermonters need us to have, such as energy and telecom, when the basic structure of committees was designed who knows how long ago. I don't think our founders really thought about energy and telecom taking up such a big part of the legislature's time and responsibility. So I wanted to make sure that we could really divide our human resources to match the work that Vermonters need us to do.
So what do you expect the Energy and Telecom Committee to be doing right away this year?
I think the first off is having a conversation about what this new responsibility looks like, and start, as all committees will, with a review of state government. And for them, that would be the Public Service Board, the Department of Information and Innovation, and then get a sense of the energy landscape. That's one committee. So there are three committees that do not have any very first-time legislators on it. Typically, the money committees do not. And this was one, because it's a smaller committee and it's new and they're going to have to find their way a little bit. It's a committee made up partially of people with experience on the Commerce Committee and partially with people whose experience is on the Natural Resources and Energy Committee.
And so who's chairing that committee?
Stephen Carr of Brandon.
Okay, great. So, you've also made some other changes to committees, but while we have you here, I want to ask a couple other questions about some of the work that you'll be doing. Specifically looking at budget issues, you have in your history in the legislature done a lot on budget issues. So this is something that you know well. What do you plan to do in terms of your approach as Speaker of the House in guiding the state towards what you see as our budget priorities and in working with the Scott administration?
So one of the major things that I did as budget chair was to engage all of the other committees of the House in trying to have a better understanding of what their priorities were, so that information could go to the budget committee and we could fund those priorities first. And so the last, certainly last year's budget, we could track the memos from various committees that said these are the things we think are most important and here's our in order, and their top choices were funded. And so by taking the role of speaker and supporting committees in doing a broader and deeper evaluation and prioritization of state government, it not only helps those committees define and discover their work in a bigger, deeper way, but also it allows for that information to go straight to the budget committees so that the Appropriations Committee has more input on what the policy committees really think we need to fund.
I'm speaking with Representative Mitzi Johnson. She is the new Speaker of the House, and we're talking a little bit about what she expects to have happen in the next few days, few weeks, few months of this first half of the biennium. If you have a question that you would like to ask her or our other guests coming up, Republicans and progressives, our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211, or post a note on the Vermont Edition page at VPR.net. Raphael is calling in from Barrie. Hi, Raphael. Go ahead.
Hey,
Raphael. Hey, right. There you are. Fabulous. Go right ahead.
I got a question for her. Let me ask you a question. Do you understand how expensive it is to live in Vermont? Is there any step, any meaningful measure you're planning on taking to reduce the cost of living in that state? That's why everybody's leaving. It's too expensive to live here. That's
so, Representative Johnson, the cost of living in Vermont, Raphael says it's too expensive to live here. What are you going to do about it?
So one of the first steps that I've taken is to expand the Committee on General Housing and Military Affairs. Affordable housing is incredibly important to me, and so and that's a place where many Vermonters really struggle. I think 4 out of 5 households under about $20,000 spend a disproportionate share of their income on housing. And those are people that are often in jobs that don't have benefits, so they then have to use additional money for health care that other people might have more completely as part of a benefits package. So I think one of the first steps I've taken in order to really wrestle with this question, Raphael, is to give the committee that deals with one of the largest expenses in Vermont the additional members, make it a larger committee, and really, really enter into a robust conversation on housing by making some of this committee shift and relieving the Commerce and Economic Development Committee of some of their responsibilities. I freed them up to focus on how we can develop better jobs around the state and develop the economy, because Raphael, what you're talking about is the amount of money left over in somebody's pocket at the end of the day. You know, the money that they may earn in a job, and and the types of jobs that are available in Vermont. And then, of course, we all have expenses that we have to pay for out of those wages. And so affordability is really the money left in your pocket at the end of the day. And so we're going to be looking at all facets of this question.
You know, it's tough. You've got a 2-year term here as Speaker of the House. And of course, you know, we all know everybody gets reelected every 2 years.
Sure.
And in some ways, it's impossible to make really big changes on something like affordability or cost of living in 2 years in Vermont. And so when you get a question like that, how do you think of it in your own mind, of this idea of, yes, there are things that you want to do, but there are problems that are going to be incrementally worked on through many, many years, whether you're here or not. So this idea of what are you going to do now, it must be a tough one.
That's, and a part of what I said in my opening remarks was that I don't have the answers, that we are dealing with really complex questions. And the question at the core of it is, how can we create a strong, healthy future, that we can afford? And so I don't think of things in terms of necessarily having an answer. If there were some of these problems that had easy answers to them or had very simple answers to them, we really would have done it already. I think in terms of being able to make progress on an issue, and can we take a step or two in the right direction on any number of issues.
We got a question from Irv in Bennington who says, so far the legislative website shows the membership of only 2 committees, agriculture and forestry, and appropriations. How soon will those of us outside the Golden Dome be able to see who's on first?
Well, if the website shows those two, then it is currently in process. I mean, they were just announced, 15 minutes ago?
Yeah.
So those are the first two alphabetically, and so they will, keep looking, Irv. They're going to be there. Somebody's working on it right now, clearly.
And if you are on Twitter, I got them from April McCallum, who had, I think, screenshots, or she had taken photographs of the actual list. So you can find it on Twitter. And as Representative Johnson said, they will be online on the legislative website soon. We're talking with Representative Mitzi Johnson, new Speaker of the House here on opening day, as we mentioned earlier, already getting out of the gate early with committee assignments. Let's talk a little bit about working with the Scott administration. Mm-hmm. Governor-elect mm-hmm. Scott has said that he would like to delay some of the final implementation of the school consolidation law, Act 46. Do you think that's something that lawmakers are going to go along with? Where do you see school consolidation issues going in this year?
So if he's talking about school consolidation, that's a very different thing than district consolidation. So I hope that he is talking about consolidation of districts, which would leave all the existing schools open until the local communities decide to make any change to that. but if you are referring to Act 46, then we are having a we will be having a good discussion, and you know, I represent a variety of communities that have had a variety of responses to Act 46, and some of them have chosen to not take any action. Three of them have chosen to merge their districts, and one of them has voted no on that, and are really holding out to make sure that they can get what they want out of their school and do the right thing for their kids as they see it there. And so we will be having discussions on Act 46. We have also had, in the last couple of years, triple the number of communities vote affirmatively to merge. So the results have been really varied, that we've had so many communities say, yes, we're doing this. And we've had quite a few communities hit a brick wall and say, no, it's not working for us. So we really need to delve into the question of what isn't working and how can we make this better.
What have your conversations with Governor-elect Scott been like prior to the start of the legislature?
Actually, really good so far. You know, friendly and open. We have a lot of common ground on good governance and results-based accountability. And so I really look forward to working with that administration about that, because it really is going to take both of us. It's the legislature needs the administration to provide the information and collect the data, and the administration needs the legislature to use that data in its decision making, as you know, we are the policy body of the state.
That is Speaker of the House, Democrat Mitzi Johnson, who represents Chittenden Grand Isle. You have family members who want your time. You said you're hungry for lunch, and I can see the reporters are already circling, so you probably have more media to do. Thank you very much for talking with us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Jane, and nice to see you around the State House.
Yes, it's always a pleasure to be here. We love being in the Cedar Creek Room where we are here today. We are broadcasting live for the opening of the legislative session. Up next, the Republican point of view. House Minority Leader Don Turner will join us. This is Vermont Edition. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Today we're talking with leaders of the three major parties in the House of Representatives as we broadcast live from the Cedar Creek Room at the Vermont State House on the opening day of the new legislative biennium. If you have a question or an issue you are hoping gets addressed this year, you can stop on by and say hello to us here in the Cedar Creek Room, or give us a call at 800-639-2211. That's 800-639-2211. You can also post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. There are a lot of leaders in some important new positions this year, but one very familiar face is Senate Minority Leader Don Turner. Representative Turner, excuse me, I have just changed your chamber.
Yeah, it's okay. I'll stay in the House.
Okay,
thank
good.
You.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay, well, you know, so I guess you're staying in the House this year. Good.
Good.
He is Representative Don Turner of Milton. Representative Turner, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on the radio, on the program, Jane.
I want to talk to you first, not about legislative business, but about the thing that's been occupying your mind for the past few days and the minds of many people here in Vermont, which is, of course, this question of who should get to nominate the new Supreme Court justice. Justice Dooley is retiring in April, but he's announced his retirement now. Governor Shumlin, who's governor for one more day, would like to name his replacement. And you filed suit against Governor Shumlin being able to do that. Why? Why don't you think he should be able to make that nomination?
Well, I don't believe he has the authority to do that, to make that nomination, because our Constitution is very clear that there has to be a vacancy for a governor to appoint a new justice or to nominate a justice. So there is no vacancy on the Supreme Court now or even 3 months into this year. Justice Dooley does not leave office until the end of March. So I feel very strongly that this what Governor Shumlin is an overreach of the executive branch's authority. It's wrong, and for future generations, I wanted the court to resolve this question. What is vacancy? I mean, is vacancy now, or is it when somebody says they're not going to run again? So I brought the case to the Supreme Court. I was very pleased that they took the case up and that they've put a stay in place that the governor cannot nominate anybody at this point. But I am very concerned about the future of Vermont. And this is a question that not only pertains to the Supreme Court, but there's the Green Mountain Care Board, Natural Resources Council, Public Service Board. These are all very important positions that are six-year positions and pay a lot of money. So if an outgoing governor wanted to stack up those, they may have the potential if the court rules in favor of Governor Shumlin.
Well, couldn't an outgoing governor do that anyway if he could sort of twist the arms of somebody to retire early?
If he can, yeah, and that's within the law. I mean, I totally respect the fact that if Justice Dooley would have stepped down, this would have never happened. I mean, if he said, I'm all done effective December 31st, I would never have raised this issue. It's the point of reaching 3 months into the tenure of the next governor that really raised my concern, and there's no precedent. So I'm very hopeful and optimistic that the court will rule on this case in the next few days.
Well, yeah, certainly. It would have to rule by tomorrow, right?
Well, if they don't, Governor Shumlin will not appoint anybody, but it doesn't resolve the ongoing issue. And that's one of the things that I wanted, you know, your listeners and Vermonters to know. This is not a partisan issue. This question about who has the authority pertaining to the Constitution is a very important one, and I hope that the court rules and it's done forever.
So turning now to legislative priorities and what you hope to get accomplished this year in the House of Representatives, what would you say are the Republican priorities?
Well, our priority has not really changed. I mean, we have felt very strongly over the last 6 years that the state is spending far too much money based on the amount of revenue or income that the state generates. So we feel that state spending has to be brought in control. And we have worked very hard on that issue for the last 6 years with a Republican governor, Governor-elect Scott, coming into office tomorrow. We're optimistic that we will start in a different place than we have in the past, you know, with a very large budget that would be brought in by the administration, and the majority would massage it, but we were always playing defense. We're hopeful that the Scott administration will bring in a much more responsible budget that we can support and help maneuver or help guide through the legislative process.
Did you not want to use the word maneuver there?
Yeah, I did not want to use
it. Why?
The process is one that is a maneuvering. I mean, and it's, but for someone outside that hasn't had a lot of experience with the legislature, it doesn't sound very good.
You just think it has a negative connotation.
I think it is negative, and I'm not trying to be negative. The legislative process is part of the Constitution. It's part of our history. It's been in existence, and there is give and take and negotiation and you know, give and take on all. Hasn't been much give on the majority side over the last 6 years from my perspective, but I'm hoping there will be some more moving into this biennium with the Republican governor.
Does this feel different to you then? I mean, you have been here for a long time and you have expressed frustration over the last 6 years. So does this feel somehow new and exciting to you?
No, I mean, my role, even though I have the same role and the same title, my role has totally changed. I mean, we were always playing defense, as I said just a few minutes ago, and now it's going to be more of an offensive role. We need to support Governor-elect Scott's budget and his proposals if he's going to move his agenda. So we have to go in from a defensive standpoint to a proactive and be on the offense. So it's definitely changing. You know, communication becomes even much more critical between our caucus members and the administration and even the speaker and so on. So, you know, my role is going to be changing. People are telling me I'm supposed to be having fun now, and I haven't seen that. I've been here 11 years. I've been the leader for six. Hasn't been a whole lot of fun. But I'm hoping that for the greater good of Vermont and the people that I represent and our caucus members represent, that we can do things that are better for Vermont.
So it really hasn't been any fun. Why stay in it?
Well, you know, you always feel like that you can make a difference. You know, I came here thinking that I was going to be here a few years, I'd make a difference, and I'd go back to Milton and do what I love to do. And I still feel that I can make a difference to some degree. I've, you know, organized. Our caucus is very, you know, united now compared to when I took over. We're pretty solid. We have good people. So you hate to give up on that, but I also honestly believe I can do more good in my community in one day than I do here in 5 months. So that's a real, you know, real drag at the heart when you have to do all your work in one day and come down here for the next four. So, you know, it's a challenge, and you know, I love representing my community. It's a great honor to serve in this body and to serve as a leader, and I respect the integrity of the institution so much that I don't want to give up.
I have another question for you, but before I get to it, let's go to Patrick, who's calling in from Westford. Hi, Patrick. Go right ahead. You're here with Representative Don Turner.
Hi. So just a few states over in Maine, they have had an issue with, you know, repeatedly governors being elected without a majority of voters choosing that candidate. And that's something that, you know, we've had to deal with in Vermont in 2010 and 2014, as I'm sure you recall. The governor was elected with less than a majority of voter support, and that happened to be Governor Shremel in both cases. So I'm curious, you know, in Maine, voters have chosen to switch to ranked choice voting to make sure that whoever is elected has the support of a majority of voters. I'm curious what your thoughts are on the prospect of electoral reform along those lines.
You know, I agree with your concern, Patrick, and the concern of many Vermonters in this area. I'm not sure I understand ranked voting. I mean, if it's like what was happening in Burlington, I don't agree with that.
Instant runoff voting.
It seemed to produce outcomes that weren't really what people wanted. And there was a lot of discussion about that, and eventually the legislature did away with that. So I wouldn't want to move in that direction, but I'm definitely concerned that a majority of people are not supporting the gubernatorial candidates. Fortunately, in this election, we did have that, and that shows that it can happen, and it can happen with a Republican, which makes me very happy. So we will continue to look at this, and I appreciate your call, Patrick.
So before we do let you go, this you have said, Representative Turner, that one of the things that you have to do here is move from the defensive to the offensive, because you do have a Republican in the governor's seat. But you've also expressed some concerns. A 7 Days article came out just this week, quoting you, expressing what I would characterize as some frustration with Governor-elect Scott's appointments, that he has held over some people from the Shumlin administration, that he has appointed people like Al Gobay from the Green Mountain Care Board to be the head of Human Services. So do you feel like the Republican agenda is being represented in the choices that Governor-elect Scott has been making to lead agencies and run his administration?
You know, I have a lot of faith in Phil Scott. We have worked very, very closely in the last 6 years, him and, as lieutenant governor and me in my role. He has kept me out of a lot of trouble because I get too worked up and he would calm me down and we'd move on. So I respect him for that. And I know that they're just trying to get their legs. This is a big transition for anyone, and I respect that. My concern and the frustration that I was expressing a little bit in the 7 Days article is that Vermonters want change. That's why they voted for him. And what I was seeing and what I have been seeing is just a moving of people in the chairs. I have never seen people move around in chairs, look for different outcomes than they did before. So I'm very concerned about that. The second part of that is we still have a large minority here in the legislature that we need strong commissioners with solid support of the agenda of Governor-elect Scott pushing these issues in the legislature if you're going to get these large majorities to go along. And if there are people that are wishy-washy or have shown to be wishy-washy in the past, I am concerned about that. And I am not going to change who I have been over the last 6 years, even though my role has changed. I think it's still my job to convey my constituents' interest and Vermonters' interest in what's going on here, whether it's a Republican governor or a Democratic governor or not. I'm going to have a meeting with the governor-elect here very soon, and we will communicate, and we have been a little bit. But
more than just through the press.
Yes, yes. You know, we text once in a while and so on, but we have had meeting. We had a meeting. We're going to have many more meetings. I even structured my caucus, or our caucus, in a way that we added leadership people to, one will be, Patty McCoy will be the liaison between our caucus and the administration. That's how important, that's how I know, that's what I believe to be a very important piece of maintaining communication as we move forward.
Well, I'm sure you and I will talk again, and yes. And we can figure out, you know, then how you feel about the appointments as it moves through. Certainly still many people yet to be named. Representative Don Turner, a Republican from Milton, House Minority Leader, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thank you, Jane.
We are talking today about the start of the legislative session. We are broadcasting live from the Cedar Creek Room at the State House here in Montpelier. And if you have a question for our elected representatives today and would like to share it, you can post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. You can also call 800-639-2211. That's 800-639-2211. The Democrats and the Republicans are not the only parties in the State House, of course. The Vermont Progressive Party always represents a significant minority in the legislative body. But members say the small size of their delegation does not accurately reflect the role they can play in crafting and passing legislation. So let's learn a little bit more about the House Progressive and the agenda this year. And we're joined by Representative Robin Chestnut Tangerman, a progressive from Middletown Springs. Nice to have you on the program, Representative.
Thank you, Jane. It's a pleasure to be here.
And by Deanna Gonzalez of Winooski. Nice to have you, Representative Gonzalez.
Very nice to be here.
So let's just start out with your top priorities, because, you know, this is something that we often talk about with elected progressives, to say, what do you want to do as this very small minority to push your agenda forward? So, Representative Chestnut Tangerman, let me start with you. What do you see as the top priorities in this biennium?
Actually, Jane, I don't think that our progressive priorities have really changed over time, because the needs are still there.
You know, we heard that from the Democrats and the Republicans, too. Sounds like it's all still
we didn't
the same
plan this ahead of time. But I do think that the events playing out nationally will even highlight the priorities of our party even more. The needs of working families, the needs for child care, health care, a livable wage, which have been our priorities and continue to be.
So, Representative Gonzalez, for you, when you talk about your first term in office, the things that you're most proud of often are what Representative Chestnut Tangerman was just saying, things that reflect on human rights, civil rights. Is that still something that you think needs to be a focus of the legislature this year?
Absolutely. And I think that we have a unique opportunity in terms of focusing on things that don't cost money. When we look at both on the national level and the state level, how can we move things forward that are that benefit working Vermonters and are not at a cost? And so things like human rights and victims' rights, that we can look at how we can highlight these issues in a way that we're already doing in pockets, but how can we pull those together?
Well, how do you talk to constituents about that? Because I imagine that many of your constituents who elected you are on board with that idea of your priority. But there's also this sense that we often hear, and we get it from callers who say, yeah, but don't worry about that stuff. Do the stuff that's costing me money, my property taxes, what's happening with education reform. What about this $1.4 billion price tag we have on Lake Champlain cleanup? I want you to tackle the things that do cost money and leave the rest of it aside.
And I say that they're not in opposition to each other, that really we can do those things at the same time, that the Progressive Party last session, and we will again, are introducing bills to look at property taxes and how to equalize the cost in that, which is a huge issue for so many of us on how much our property taxes cost. And so we're not ignoring anything. And in fact, it's doing things in tandem to make the totality of our life be important.
Go ahead.
I would say that in my district, which is a very rural district, property taxes were by far the number one item that people wanted to talk about. And, you know, one of the things that progressives have advocated for a while is shifting education funding away from a base of property taxes and more onto income taxes. And it's not an easy shift. And there was a study last year, Senators Polina and Pearson introduced a bill. So I think we definitely have an interest in following that thread.
Is there a bill that you think will be put forward in the next couple of months on that idea of shifting how our education is paid for?
And I think we need to assess the report by Joint Fiscal and move from there.
Let's go to Beth, who's calling in from Rutland. Hi, Beth. Go right ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Hi, I hope you're all having a good time today. I was hoping that maybe someone could revisit the paid sick leave bill. I don't know where my mind was last year, because I would have written letters, but all of a sudden it dawned on me there are many, many Vermonters who have two or three part-time jobs and not a full-time job, and those Vermonters would like to accrue a little bit of sick leave. So I will hang up and listen to what you have to say. Thank you.
Beth, thanks very much for the call. And of course, paid sick leave did pass, but as Beth points out, it only affects companies of a certain size and employees who work a certain number of hours. So, mm-hmm. Representative Gonzalez, is that something that you think will be re-looked at?
I don't think that it'll be re-looked at this session, that it was a big push in order to get that passed. A lot of people worked for a very long time and worked with a lot of business owners in terms of that. I think what we can see is advocacy for family medical leave insurance, and that being something that is shared by both employee and employer and is available for people that are self-employed. And so including people that are part-time workers in that. So while the paid sick leave at this point will probably not be revisited, we have these other programs that we are moving forward that could really benefit a lot of folks.
Well, we look forward to hearing more from the progressives and from all lawmakers as this first half of the biennium continues. Representative Robin Chestnut Tangerman, a progressive from Middletown Springs, and Deanna Gonzalez of Winooski, thank you both very much for being on the program today. I appreciate
it. Thank you, Jane.
Thank you so much.
And that does it for today's program. Tomorrow, we will check in with the leaders of the Vermont Senate on their priorities for the new biennium. We'll be joined by President Pro Tem Tim Ash and Senate Minority Leader Joe Benning. We'll also get their take on how the Senate will be affected by the election of the new governor and lieutenant governor. You can email your comments or questions for Senators Ash and Benning to vermontedition@vpr.net, and then tune in live at noon. Our show is produced by Rick Singeri, Sam Gale-Rosen, and Meg Malone. Mary Williams directed the show. Our engineers are Frank Alwine and Chris Albertine, and our executive producer is Patty Daniels. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.